News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. I'm on with Matt Rinker. He's running for Burlington City Council. He works as an insurance agent in town. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So you made it past the first round.
I did. And I'm excited to get working on the general election.
So we'll jump right into it here. We want to talk details this time.
Okay.
The city of Burlington's tax rate is $16.33 per $1,000 assessed valuation. It was raised to that level in February in order to pay for personnel increases.
Correct.
At the Burlington Police and Fire Departments. With that in mind, would you approve another increase in order to increase staffing levels further, as both the police chief and the fire chief are both requesting?
So as said before, there are obviously situations that can be presented to a community where they're going to have to raise property taxes. I will tell you that's my last resort. I look at the need for property tax increases as something more emergency related. For example, if we have a significant infrastructure cost that we weren't planning for that arises, and that's the only option. I'd like to be a little more kind of open with regard to revenue. The first thing you got to do is sit down and figure out your budget, okay, and figure out what's important, priorities, whether it's staffing or it's infrastructure or it's programs. Those are all things that we have to look at in great detail and figure out, okay, where can we save a little bit of money here in order to be able to achieve the things that we want to achieve. Yes, I am for more police officers, and my goal is that's a really just a not a long-term necessity. If you can create an environment where people that want to commit crime are uncomfortable committing crime, ultimately the goal is they're going to go somewhere else. And then the need for an additional 6, 10, 15 officers isn't there. And you can go ahead and start to cut back at that point. But as far as property tax increases go, that's a last resort. And I believe it's probably a last resort for anybody as long as you're creative in ways of coming up with new revenue or really sitting down and prioritizing what's important.
You talk about, you know, making the city less attractive to criminal elements. How exactly would the city council kind of go about doing that and mitigating crime in the city?
So there's a lot of different policies and techniques that other communities like ours has used. When I lived in San Diego, near San Diego, California, they created a community policing program that involved a community watch where people within their community would volunteer for this program. They'd work in conjunction with the local police department there. They would go through months of training, and basically they're an observe and report type of volunteer force, much like a community watch program. But it's organized, and they're trained and they're coordinated by the police department. And what would happen is teams of 3 to 5 people would get together and they'd wear a big bright orange shirt that said community policing volunteer. And they would just basically go out and provide a presence in our community. And presence is really the first rung on the ladder of force, if you ask any police officer. If I'm sitting in my office and somebody walks in and they want to rob the place, but there happens to be a police officer sitting in the chair in the waiting room, chances are they're going to reconsider just because of that presence.
Sure.
So we kind of use that same thought in a community policing technique with regard to the volunteer force. Their whole objective is to observe things, take notes. If they see a crime that requires an immediate response, then they would have a direct link to the dispatch center to be able to report those crimes. The most important part here, though, is to make sure that the people policing their communities are people from their communities. I want people from South Hill to police South Hill. I want people that live over on Kestner to police Kestner. I want people on North Hill to police North Hill. I don't want people from Kestner going to North Hill, and I don't want people from North Hill going out by the high school, because it's also about building relationships with your neighbors and making sure that they're comfortable with the fact that you're there, and you're there to order in order to deter per criminal activity. Another thing you can do, I'd like to see us bring on another canine under the department.
Two canines total.
I think as far as a community our size, we're one of the largest that only has one. For a long time, we were one of the largest communities that didn't have any.
Sure.
So I think we could really be a lot more aggressive in some of our anti-trafficking techniques if we had two. The amount of strain that's put on one, especially when you take into consideration days off, training, recertification for the dog, training for the officer that has to work with the animal. It really takes a lot away from their ability to be effective. So I'd like to see us have another canine unit. I'd also like to see us, I know we just recently spoke with Darren Grimshaw, and he had indicated that they hired their 10th reserve officer. I'd like to see that force brought up to full strength and get to an appropriate manning level where the training, when you do have turnover, it isn't detrimental to that group. If we're effectively able to use them, then we can really try to alleviate some of the stresses that we're putting on our full-time officers with regard to hours and manning. If you look at the amount of time that those guys spend, whether it's working or training or sitting in court or writing reports, there's a lot of stress that's being put on them, and there's only so much stress you can put on somebody before really their effectiveness starts to decrease. Well, the only way we can alleviate that is through, like I said, community policing techniques like volunteer forces, adding more police officers, full-time police officers, and bringing that reserve force up to speed. The other thing I'd like to see us adopt, and it's been done in other communities, is more random policing measures. But this is something that really can't be done until that reserve force and the full-time officer force are really brought up to full strength, because when you add those types of aggressive random policing measures, now you put more stress on people.
What do you mean by random?
So some communities, and I know it's been discussed, but for example, it's as simple as taking a police canine and just conducting baggage inspections at the train station.
Sure.
When trains come in.
Okay.
Things like that. And there's hundreds of different types of techniques. I worked in law enforcement when I was in the military. I had the opportunity to work side by side with California Highway Patrol, United States Border and Customs Protection, Border Patrol, U.S. Marshals, and had an opportunity to really observe a lot of the techniques that they use in order to prevent trafficking. And I think those are some things that we could really adopt in our community, even though we're not on a border.
Sure.
But we could still adopt those in our community in order to try and deter continued trafficking and drug activity in our community.
Tax increment financing is frequently used by the city. And what are your thoughts on TIF? When should it be used? When should it not be used?
That's a really tough question, because every project is different. In one project that may have the same number of houses may fit something that I feel more comfortable applying it for than another project. I'm going to look at things like, okay, what amount of infrastructure is the developer going to have to put in? What part of the market need is this project meeting? Okay. What kind of economic benefit are we going to receive from this? Also, what's our long-term tax revenue going to be? You know, I have a lot of people that have said, hey, you know, why are we going to provide TIF financing to developers, and then our community is going to have to support the cost of those homes and services that they use throughout the time that we're no longer or we're not receiving any revenue? And my argument to that is this: new homes have a significantly decreased cost in our community versus older homes. The infrastructure is brand new, so the maintenance is going to be significantly less. And typically, newer homes require less fire and police responses just because they're newer. They're up to code. There's less possibility for issues to arise that would require those responses.
Water rates are high and constantly increasing. Is there anything that the city council can do to alleviate high utility costs?
Well, utility being gas, electric, and water, we really can't control gas and electric. Those are more state issues, and those are also private industry issues. As far as water goes, the EPA has really been the biggest hurdle in mandating the sewer separation projects that we have in going on currently. I think we're about halfway through that project. After that project's over, we've got other costs. We're looking at things like water treatment facilities and sanitation treatment facilities that are probably going to have to be upgraded over the next 50 years. And those are big numbers. As far as an alleviation goes, the only thing we can really do is increase our taxable base in order to be able to help cover some of those costs down the road so that we're not constantly increasing water rates. The reason we're increasing those rates today is because the leaders in our city have not done a good job in the last 15 and 20 years of creating a plan in order to grow, in order to be able to cover those costs. Some of it also had to do with the fact that maybe it wasn't as expected. It was kind of laid in their lap and they could only react to it instead of be proactive. But I think when you get down to a lot of the nuts and bolts as far as budget issues go today, it's because of poor decisions that we've made in the last 15, 20 years with regard to growth that we're not able to cover a lot of those costs.
Now, you've made it this far. You've made it onto the November ballot. What case would you make to Burlington voters who maybe did not vote for you in the primary? Why should they pick you to sit on the council in November?
I think I'm the best candidate because I have three focuses. My first one is we have got to work on a plan, both short-term and long-term, that is going to decrease the cost of living in the city of Burlington. Most importantly, taxes. We've got to get our property tax rate down. It's got to fall more in line with the state in order to be competitive, and the only way we can do that is through growth. And as I've discussed both in your radio station and other radio stations in the newspaper and talked face-to-face with people, I've got a very long and complex plan in order to make that work and happen. Help work with the police department to get crime under control. As I said, I've worked in law enforcement. My brother's a Border Patrol agent. My father worked in law enforcement. So I've kind of been in that community all my life. And I'm bringing a different perspective to the table than any other council person that's sitting out there. None of those guys have sat in a squad car for 12 hours and then had to go back to a station and write reports. I've done that. So I understand when Police Chief Beard says, listen, we're stressed, or these are issues that we're facing. I can relate to those because I worked in that environment. The other thing is quality of living. That's a huge thing, and it's a huge thing for everybody, whether or not they realize it or not. In order to be able to maintain a population level, you have to take care of the citizens that are living in our community. And in order to bring in new citizens into our community, we also have to improve upon the quality of living in order to attract those citizens. I'll use last night, for example. That was a perfect opportunity to create a space in our community that would be positive for both bringing in new people into our community and improving the quality of living for people that do live in our community. And I'm talking directly with regard to the riverfront project.
The splash pad, the auditorium, the shade structure, and the auditorium.
So I worked directly on that project, and I know that when we talked about that project, we also talked about the fact that the riverfront is the most important asset that our community has. Not very many communities like ours have that, and we're not doing a good job of creating a functional and efficient and optimizing place in order to provide entertainment or relaxation to people that live in our community. And last night, the council voted to not pursue any of the three projects in front of them. And I understand their reasoning for that. However, I would say that given the money and the matches that we have in place for this year, this was the year to do it. By not voting for that, they have basically said that we're not going to support it this year, but we'll look at it next year. But they've also said that now we're going to pay more for it because we've got to come up with more match money next year versus this year. So we could end up spending more than $50,000 more for those same projects than they would have cost us today. And that is really a quality of living thing that I think we need to start to address. People are more mobile today. Whether it's with communication or their jobs, and they have the ability to choose communities that provide a lot of amenities. Those amenities contribute directly to their quality of living, and if we're not going to be good about making sure that our community is full of amenities to draw people in and to keep people here, then we're going to have a really hard time paying our bills and growing our community in the future unless we change that frame of thought.
Matt Rinker, he is a local insurance agent, U.S. Navy veteran, Riverfront Advisory Committee member, and a candidate for Burlington City Council.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you very much for having me.